back, pulls up the three, boom, knocks it down. Curry from the corner at three, puts it in.
For overtime, makes it, Garrett, Murray.
Welcome to the MVP cast from me, Mark Woods, and two very special guests on this edition. In a week, where we'll see the premiere of a new documentary called Making It Rain. It's produced by Matt Halliwell at the NBA, and it tells the history of Scottish basketball. And if you're wondering what the connection is between Scotland and the game of hoops, then you go right back to the very origin of the sport, to its inventor, Dr. James Naismith, whose father, John, emigrated from Glasgow to Canada in search of a better life, and then spawned a son who'd give the world this whole new ballgame. The documentary is narrated by James's grandson, Jim, who I spoke to during his visit to the home city of his great-grandfather.
Jim, I mean, it's a remarkable kind of connection that your family has to basketball, because there's not many families that can say we've invented a sport at the outset. I mean, obviously, I know your grandfather, James, passed away when you were just three, but what was the memories that you were told about him and that, you know, hearing about what he achieved over the years?
It's an interesting question, because part of what I was not told was anything that might make me think there was something special about me because of something somebody else did. And that was my dad, and as a kid, dad says it, that's good for me. So people think, well, you must have been an early, no, it wasn't really part of my life. But looking backwards, I think it was a very wise decision on dad's part, because I took off the path I want to take off, and that's a whole other story. Did not include inventing sport.
What was the point when you started to, I guess, I know it's always there, but when do you start taking an interest in this and really start to appreciate what your grandfather achieved?
That really started my younger brother, Jan. Okay, he passed away. I knew some of the things he'd been into, and my sister, myself, Jan, and our stepmother all got together, and what are we going to do with this? And he was in the best position, we thought, to chase it, and he wanted to. And so that, you know, am I left out? Yes. Intentionally, yes. Think it was a good thing? Yes. only when he passed away, then all of a sudden, because of my name and the relationship, I get people calling me. And Beverly and I, we've been married for over 60 years, so, okay. We go back a long ways. And I had no plan to do this kind of thing after I finally retired at the age of 76. So I pushed that quite a bit too. But said, you know, this is an opportunity totally unanticipated, but knowing Granddad's basic, what he thought was really not just interesting, but strongly positive in people's lives was his beliefs. I knew that. And we got to think, you know, this may be an invitation to join in something that was terribly important to him. And so we decided between the two of us, said, let's just go for it, having no idea what that meant, really, other than just, you know, we get these opportunities, just accept them. So we did that with several people, and we don't know a single one of them from, you know, but it's interesting. And they seem to have that personal interest in people that I know Granddad had. And I could talk a long time about all of those stories, because they've all been fascinating, and too much that Pope, I used to say, well, that was a strange coincidence. I don't really believe that anymore, because you don't have strange coincidences after strange coincidences after strange. So I think there's a path.
We're sitting here in Glasgow, and for those who don't know the story, explain the special family connection that the Naismiths had with this part of the world.
Well, my dad, of course, was born in Lawrence, Kansas. His dad spent the last half of his life at the University of Kansas. So that's where Dad was born. His dad was born in Almont, near Almont, Ontario, in Canada. But his dad, John, had been sent over to Canada, I think at about the age of 8 or 9 or 10, by himself, which meant there were family in Canada, and the family thought this young man is going to have a better chance in Canada than he's going to have in Scotland. That's my own read, but I'm probably correct. That's not an uncommon story. And then Matt really has been a big help to us in finding more detail about where in this area did John Naismith come from, my great-granddad. And it happens that it was very close, as I told the kids, very close to where I'm standing right now.
And this is obviously coming out of the documentary, Making It Rain, mm-hmm. and Matt Halliwell, you refer to the producer of the fact they came from the Gorbals, and which you know was an area of Glasgow that was deprived, and then all the way to Canada and the family. But I guess there was always, from what I've ever read, the Scottish connection stayed quite strong in terms of being proud of that heritage.
I think that's built into people with Scottish heritage. And I'll speak for myself, including me, because there's a certain, I'll just use the word pride, but there's a certain pride in being associated with a group of people who are known for being inventive, known for being hard workers, known for being strong believers. That's terribly important to me. All of these things, and when it goes click, and you think, well, how many places in this world that I know about, and I've been in several, do I feel that way about? Well, Scotland. Short list.
Texas as well, I presume, where you're from. What was the, I mean, when you've looked into this, what do you think was the real inspiration that forced James or caused James to go, let me invent this new sport? Because he could, if he played football or was involved in football, etc., American football. But what do you think led him to go, this, I've got this brainwave, let me do this crazy idea that's now exactly. become something incredible.
Precisely. Very well said, because I've thought about this and researched it as much as possible to do, I think. There's material out there that somebody's got a good imagination, and people say, well, I read this book. I said there are better books. You know, I'm not in the book-selling business, okay? But I'll take you back to the School for Christian Workers, and winter, stormy winter time, can't play outside. A bunch of guys like Granddad that love the outside sports, the rougher the better, I think. And they're beginning to be a problem. And whoever's in charge knows problems. You know, one of the reasons he's there is to keep them from happening. And he gets a hold of Granddad, who was instructor as well as a student, as well as I don't know all the rest of the detail, come up with something. Basically, these guys like to do enough to do that and stop tearing the place up, you know. And i.e. some gymnastic or sport. Well, he knew gymnastics wasn't going to work, and that was kind of what he was there for. So he thought about sports. Well, he started off taking a known sport like rugby. Well, can I modify that so they can play a form inside? And every time he tried these, rugby and lacrosse and I'm sure not hockey, but you got a gym with a hard floor, hard walls, steel columns, et cetera. It's not going to work. And if two things he said in one of the notes he wrote, he said, then I became philosophical. And what he meant by that is I knew that if I kept trying to modify games they already liked, they'd never like them. They liked the game. They didn't like the modification. Which meant he, in my language, he said, I know, I've got to start from scratch. And then he specifies what scratch meant. He didn't use the word. I used the word. He said, first of all, you got to have a ball. Okay, so, small one? No. You can hide that, et cetera, et cetera. It's got to be big enough to, let's say football, soccer ball. Okay, got the ball. Okay, the next thing I thought would be the goal. It's not what he said. What he said was, okay, we've got a ball. It's got to have a goal. What kind of goal does it have to have? And then he thought, you know, hockey, vertical goal, soccer, football, went through all of these. And where force is terribly important, the harder the better. Won't work in a gym. So the next thing he came up with was, and you'd say was the goal, but no, what came up next in his mind was the path of the ball. And he knew this one meant hard. The only way you can do that is you got to chunk it as hard as you can. But this one, then that went back to the game he played as a kid, Duck on a Rock, where the preferred shot, the one that worked best, was an arch shot. And then it landed with a little force. Aha, I removed the force. And that worked for that game. Well, then it said, okay, what kind of game am, what kind of goal am I talking about? He's thinking a box, about 18 inches square. Size, okay, that'll work. So when he asked, probably the janitor, the maintenance man at the school, he said, you got any boxes about this size? I'll go look. And his name actually was is correctly reported most everywhere. His name was Stebbins. And so he comes back and he said, Doc, I said, I don't think he was called Doc at that point. Later he had a medical degree. He had that doctorate. But says, I can't find any boxes, but I got a couple of peach baskets. Will that work? Well, he was off the farm. You know, he knew what a peach basket was. Yeah, that'll work. Give me a couple. So he got a couple. Some people say he nailed them. I think somehow he attached them to the railing that was up at street level because the gym was down at basement level. And that's where the 10 feet came from because that rail was about 10 feet up there. So he got the baskets put up. And now he's got the ball. He's got the baskets. And you've heard the recording of his voice. Okay. And you remember what he said? I had the baskets and I got the men together, 9 on each team because there was 18 in the class. He said, the game is to get this ball in the other man's goal. And that's about all he told them, evidently. And he said, so then the first game of basketball began. Okay, there'd been an argument of when that was. That ends the argument as far as I'm concerned. I told people, I said, no buts. The man invented the game, and he said that was the first game. I think that's probably true.
That's good enough for most people.
Yeah, good enough for me.
I mean, he fortunately, if he did live long enough to see basketball at the Berlin Olympics in 1936.
Because it almost immediately went to China, went to Japan, went to France, went into Canada. Well, he was Canadian. He wasn't a U.S. citizen at that time. So some people say, well, it's a U.S. sport. No, it's not. It's invented by a Canadian. Come on, reach
and in. And a Scottish Canadian at that one. So we can attempt some claim in that.
What better Canadian is there?
Are there any other kind of Canadians? Obviously, it was that was an incredible achievement to go from something that was in his own mind to an Olympic sport of all things within 40 years, really, just over 40 years. But I'm asking you to hypothesize here. But what do you think he would think of today that this sport's been played back where his parents came from, all around the world, that the NBA is this huge, huge league. It's the second biggest probably sport in the world. And I mean, can you in any way imagine what his mind would think of seeing this humble invention of his that was done just to help young men is now this vast, vast sport?
It's an interesting question to me because that's a point where I try to skip a couple of generations and try to think like he might. And because I kind of did the same thing. I got through most of my life with no particular connection to basketball. And then all of a sudden, here's this sport. And because of my name, I get involved in places I never imagined I'd be involved in, talking to people I never imagined I'd be doing. And I think, you know, he'd be kind of the same way. And what it brings me back to is I think he would be amazed at the growth of the sport, but I think he'd also ask the question, how does this relate to a better life for young people? Because that's where he was focused. How much money did you make? No. Clearly, no. Not only that, but beware.
You could have patented it, and you could have all had this vast inheritance.
You know, if we'd have followed that, I might be, you know, drunk and dead. Or I might be out there inviting you to, why don't you go with me in my Rolls Royce and we'll take that nonsense, you know, to me. That's not it. It's not the size. It's not the money. It's a man who loves people, trying to reach people in the most effective way he can imagine as early as possible. And as I've gotten older, I'm beginning to really appreciate the power of working with young kids, little kids. We've got 4 of our own and 24 grandchildren or great-grandchildren, so we got a big family. But the importance of what those kids are taught when they're small is lifetime. There's lifetime modifications that can be made. And to me, that ought to be number one on a lot of people's lists. So when I get with a crowd that, oh boy, we made this much money, I said, leave me out, guys. I've got other things to do.
Let me ask you finally about the documentary. I mean, obviously you're narrating this story of Scottish basketball, and it is a kind of love story in a way to the sport in so many ways, of a sport that grew from small origins to be exported around the world. What impression, when you were seeing this and working on it, what impression did it leave you that this thing had grown to end up back in Scotland?
What impression did it leave me? I didn't get that.
In terms of an impression, did it leave you seeing this documentary when it's finished, about what had been achieved over here in Scotland and in Britain for basketball?
It just really firmed up my previous impression, which was I love the Scottish approach, because I think it's calling important what I think is really important. And I've not run into this other bit about, well, let me show the balance sheet and so forth. That's business. That's not where I am. I can prove that. I didn't do terribly well in business.
Jim, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. Well, and thank you for your family for bringing us the game.
Well, that's the thoughts of Jim Naismith. Let's talk to someone who's actually featured as a player in the documentary, Kieran Achara. How did you get involved in this? Because it's a documentary that was a bit of a labour of love from the NBA, and you now feature prominently talking about the modern era of British or Scottish basketball.
Yeah, I was originally approached by Matt Halliwell, who's obviously got his links back to Scotland, and we just kind of got in the conversation about Naismith and obviously, you know, being deep rooted in Scotland and his heritage. And you know, I kind of talked about what I thought about that and how passionate about that was and the future of the sport. And I think he kind of must have felt sorry for me in the end and just said, you know, we can find a piece, but he thinks your story is good to tell. So I was really happy to be featured on that and actually share the story of, okay, what's next? That's the most important thing. We always look back in history. It's really, really important to understand the history. And I felt, as a basketball player from Scotland, I was quite ashamed to not know anything about our history. And why that, you know, why hasn't been talked about? Why are these stories not being shared more? So now I feel that, you know, it's now part of my goal to go forward, is to make sure I'm spreading the word about what happened before, but also be focused on, okay, what's next and how do we get there?
It is extraordinary, some of the footage. I mean, you have the Scotland team going to New York and appearing in the Ed Sullivan Show, which was the biggest nightly show in the States. And you have people like Bill McInnes, of course, sadly passed away, but, you know, and the great British players of his era, you know, on tour and, you know, wearing his kilts abroad, and Burra Muir with big nights playing Real Madrid, and all, you know, people like Mike D'Antoni talking about facing Scottish teams in Europe. I mean, I guess we always talk about the current state of British basketball. I guess plenty of people, myself included, are not well appraised on the great achievements that there were in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, and like I said, for me, it was very humbling, because I'm looking at what's going on at the Glasgow Rocks and I'm thinking, wow, it's amazing what we're doing, but we're actually still far behind what used to be. So there's a long way to go, but at the same time, there's an optimism there who's saying that this has been done before. There has been a lot of success. We were going places. Obviously, it was a lot come down to the investment in the sport then. But when you put investment into something like that, it can be successful here. So that's promising to know that it has worked in the past. It's now, how do we get there now? And, you know, I feel, again, it's a part of my journey to make sure that we're continuing to grow from strength to strength. So it's actually reconnecting me with a lot of the late great players, and I'm doing my research now into the history, because I think we can learn a lot from the past. It's just that we have to make sure that we're searching, we're connecting with the players of old and the old coaches and the old infrastructures, because I believe that they will have the answers on how to get to that next stage.
There was that great tale, or the many great tales that's in the documentary, with Alton Bird talking about, you know, his days and the rivalries that went on then, and the kind of pride, I guess, of also going and playing teams down south and beating teams down south, etc. I mean, you think that somehow in a way that is something that we've lost, that, you know, that we don't, I guess, we don't see older players, past players regularly at some clubs, and, you know, I guess we
we don't appreciate sometimes that how big that era was. I'm not even just talking about the era in the 80s and 90s when it was throwing money at things, but there was an era where the sport was flourishing quite organically.
Yeah, there is a disconnect. And actually, I remember listening to some of Paul Blake's interviews down at Newcastle talking about creating a database and making sure that we stay connected through like some type of CRM kind of model. And I think it's really, really important. It's actually pivotal. You know, I went to university in America. They were the best for. I still receive messages from my university come along, joining our celebrations. They send me, you know, T-shirts and so forth to be a part of that family, be a part of that culture. There is a UK basketball culture, you know, and we've neglected a lot of it. So we have to be those, you know. You know, I always say someone who's carrying the culture. We have to have more influencers who are carrying the culture and actually spreading the word. I think one of the biggest problems we've had in the past was it's just the turnover. We've had such a turnover of people coming in and out that there begins to be this disconnect. So we have to find a way to revitalize the game, reconnect, and making sure that we share those experiences together as a nation. When things are going well, you know, we share on those experiences with the future, with the past. It's really, really important. And you know, again, going back to my story, I feel that I need to be one of those people who are in the heart of that, who are finding a way to connect everyone together and making sure that we're talking about the success of our basketball and where we're wanting to go, but at the same time not forgetting where we came from.
You've had a chance now to meet the grandson of the guy who invented a game. I mean, in a sort of curious way as a question, how cool is that?
It's the coolest. Honestly, getting to see that and, you know, hold the World Cup trophy today, it was such a highlight. But at the same time, the biggest message I got from that was that, you know, Dr. James Naismith, he had a purpose of why he started basketball in the first place. And it was all about developing young people and making sure that they were striving to, you know, to go forward in their life and live a, you know, in his terms, a purer life. Basketball is an amazing sport for developing people. I'm indebted to basketball. It's given me an education. It's given me a chance to see the world, connect with, you know, new people. All those experiences have been through that sport. We owe it to the next generation to give them the same opportunities. And using basketball as a tool, and that doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to be a professional basketball player. They might be a coach, or they might be a fan. They might be some type of thing that brings people together. And I feel that we've put a lot of barriers up. You know, when I'm looking at the club setups, I think it's, if you're not a part of that club anymore playing the basketball, then you're not involved in basketball, and it should not be that way. Basketball is meant to be enjoyed by all, playing or not playing. So how can we find a way to make sure that everyone's connected and enjoying the sport together?
Sounds like you've got something to do with your retirement.
Yeah, well, I've got a little mission, but at the same time, I have to learn how to pay the bills. So, it's something I'm very passionate about. You know, like I said, I genuinely feel like I'm indebted to the sport. It's given me a great life thus far. So I want to make sure that I stay connected in some shape or form to keep going and keep spreading the good word.
I wish you good luck.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And you can watch Making It Rain on Sky Sports Action at 6:30 or 9 p.m. this Wednesday. It should also be available very soon on the NBA's YouTube channel. That's it for this edition. You can subscribe to the podcast via your usual providers or listen to all the editions via our website at mvp247.com. We'll also get a wrap of all the action from the BBL and WBBL playoff finals. Another edition of the MVP cast coming very soon. But from me, Mark Woods, it's bye for now.